Session number 17771, Mr. Roy Hamlin.
Where were you born, please?
I was born here in Newton Abbot, 13th of April, 1924.
Now, you were telling me that your family background is connected in some way with Widdicombe.
Yes.
In what way?
Well, there were originally six families who finally made their settlement at Widdicombe, the first family being Taylors, the second family being Hamlins. There is a little memento of that on the village green itself, a granite monument, Uncle Tom Cobley and all the boys on the old grey mare, and that was donated by Francis Hamlin Esquire.
What did your father do for a living?
My father was a mason plasterer, and he was one of the two best tradesmen of that nature in this town. In fact, a lot of the cornice work on some of the older houses in Newton Abbot were actually his work. It has to be said that even the bosses themselves were not capable of that type of work. But he did this ornate, what you might call the cornice work, which was the specialised work.
Did you go to school in Newton Abbot?
In Newton Abbot, in Woolborough, Church of England Elementary School. My schooling was from the age of 5, and I left school at 14.
Did you get a job?
I did, actually, before I was 14, because to obtain the job, I had to be 14, and I had an interview on the 5th of April, my birthday being the 13th, so I promptly made my birthday the 5th, and in that case I was 14, according to the employer.
What was the job?
The employer was in the stationery. I was dealing with the newspapers. I did also a paper round, and then did the sifting through of the papers, the magazines and what have you afterwards.
So this was in 1938 that you left
1938,
school?
1938, that's right.
Do you remember Neville Chamberlain declaring war on Germany?
Very well indeed, yes. Yes. I wasn't deeply active in politics. My father was, if I may say this, a wee bit active in the political scene that... he did belong to the Labour Party, and he did a lot of work on their behalf. But for myself, I was, I suppose the reminiscences that I have is that immediately in the neighbourhood that I was born in was the local Tory headquarters and the local Liberal headquarters. And I suppose that was as far as my interest in politics went. We used to roam the streets singing down, down, down with the with the Tory candidate, and up, up, up with the Liberal candidate. But yeah, Neville Chamberlain. Yes, of course he was known to me, and we did listen to that broadcast of the 1938 when he returned with the paper from Munich and said, "I've got it, peace in our time." And only to find it shattered on September the 3rd, 1939. But it didn't have any real impact, not to me at that age. The importance of it didn't carry the true significance that you would think it would have.
What was Newton Abbot like in wartime for a school boy, for a young teenager?
Well, we seem to still carry on our social life. I was highly connected with the church. Not that that made me a religious fanatic or anything like that. I belonged to the church choir. We had different activities concerning with the church. We held dances and different functions. And so we carried on our normal life in that sense. I joined the Home Guard, by the way, as well, and I think I thoroughly enjoyed the company of that. We had a local businessman, a man by the name of Austin. He was our officer, and we belonged to what was known as a mobile platoon, so that we had a little bit more interest than the ordinary member of the Home Guard would have. Of course, the place was absolutely blacked out. You had to be very careful manoeuvring around the town back in those days. Otherwise, bang, you'd go into a lamppost. But no, we enjoyed in our own way. But of course, the bombing, we experienced just a wee bit of that. The first being the railway station. I was out in the country with my granddad at that time on a farm. And I remember the German planes being chased by our fighters. I remember hearing bombs being dropped. And it wasn't until we came back to Newton Abbott that we found out that the bombs had been dropped on the railway station. A row of houses that were close by were completely demolished. I was a bit concerned there because I did have friends living in them, but they were still found to be safe. My father was air raid warden, so he was able to tell me a little bit of what went on. I remember the railway lines from the station being blown a considerable distance over into the local park, fortunately missing whoever was in the park. But
whereabouts in the railway station did the bombs drop?
Actually, on the train itself. It was crowded with, actually, with servicemen, with naval personnel who were en route to returning to the naval base at Plymouth, and the train received a direct hit. So there was quite a few casualties there.
And what was the name of the streets where the houses were hit?
South Devon Terrace. They were adjacent to the railway line, just by what is known as Station Bridge.
Which year do you think this was?
That was 1940. That was our first taste of what warfare meant.
Do you know which month that was?
No, I don't. I can't. That memory has gone dim. I believe it must have been about August, I believe.
Do you remember any other German Air Force attacks on Newton?
Yes, yes. Our own church, St. Paul's Church. It was a narrow miss. There was a great huge fir tree in the grounds of the church, and that received a direct hit. It shattered the glass and part of the structure of the altar side of the church. I was by that time a server in the church, serving on the altar, and it did quite a lot, but mostly the damage was most glass. But of course our famous old fir tree, that one was completely demolished. It was a stick of bombs, and I remember that the next one fell on Mount Pleasant. It demolished a house there, and there was an air raid warden who was on duty on the corner there, and evidently, according to the rumours, his head was blown off. You know, these sort of horrible tales circulated around. But definitely he was killed by the impact of that bomb that landed on that house. That was not very far from St. Paul's Church.
Was this a Roman Catholic church?
No, Church of England. Church of England. It was a church that I was connected to because I was baptised there, confirmed there, finally married, served in the altar, choir boy. But as I say, it's not that I was too deep into religion, but it was a way of life back then. It was something of interest.
So it sounds as though there were quite a few bombs dropped on Newton Abbott.
Well, I suppose you could say I don't think more than any other place. I'm the Torquay received their fair share, but certainly Newton Abbot was a rail centre. Its demise now, after Beeching did his job, Newton Abbot was next to Swindon the main railway centre of the Great Western Railway. Because I grew up with this. In fact, I even applied for a job back in the days when I was 14. But back in those days, it meant on the Great Western Railway, unless you had someone in the family connected with the railway, you didn't stand much chance of being accepted, and I wasn't. But it was certainly a large depot, and adjacent to the station precinct was the Acne sidings, which was where all the mainline trains of the Great Western Railway for this area here were assembled. So if I'm talking about the Torbay Express, then it was assembled there in Hackney Sidings and then taken down to Paignton where it commenced from. And so all these actual trains, you see, were assembled in that siding, especially with the goods, which made it a prime target. So I would say in Newton Abbot that was more the target than any other.
Did you personally find the bombing frightening?
I don't know how to answer that. I don't think the full impact of it really struck me. It was just a phase of war. We used to lie awake sometimes, you know, listening to the planes going over, especially when Plymouth was bombed. But you could tell if it was a bomber, you could tell if it was a plane loaded with bombs by the deeper roar of the engines. You could tell. You could tell if it was a lighter plane, a fighter or whatever, different altogether. You could even, I think in the end, even differentiate between the enemy plane and the Allied plane. But I suppose that was the most frightening part, is listening to this more deeper-throated roar of a bomber laden, that you knew that plane was a potential danger. And
now, what type of things did you learn in the Home Guard?
It was quite enlightening, the use of the rifle, the use of Bren gun, the use of the Piat gun, which came into existence at that time. It was all very helpful later on in life. But I think the main thing was, quite frankly, the discipline that you learned, that you were part of a team and that you had to work together. I think that was good grounding for when I finally had to join the army.
We see this program called Dad's Army on the television. Was the Home Guard anything like that?
Oh, yeah, I think we could relate to it a little bit. I think we had, if I say great fun, I hope you don't get me wrong, it was wartime. But it was a different humour. We could relate to incidents that were quite funny at times. No, I enjoyed the comradeship. And this is what served me so good later on in life. Later on in the army life, I mean.
Any incidents that happened to you in the Home Guard that you can recount?
None, not really particularly, no. Unless it was that if we were breaking the rules, we did have Mr. Austin was quite a good officer commanding, and he used to miss us at times. Well, the reason for that was that we were only young boys, and there was an old boy in the malt store, which lay between the generating station and the railway itself.
Which store?
A malt store, where the grain was kept, you know. And this old boy had a wonderful furnace going, which he had to keep going all night. And on those bitter cold nights, it was a temptation just to drift in. He had his tea brewing, and we would sit just to warm ourselves a wee bit. And Mr. Austin at times would remark that he couldn't find any guards available. But that was breaking the the rule completely.
Did you think at that time that the Germans would invade?
Never. I never at any time. Now, that was remarkable. When I look back at that, there was never at any time that I thought that we would lose the war or that the Germans would invade. I think it was naive, actually, because I think when you look through the history of the World War II, you can find that the possibility was very nearer than what we thought. But for myself, never. I never had any doubts.
Was that because you didn't think they would get across, or because you thought they would be defeated if they did get across?
I never thought very deeply of these possibilities. We used to hear rumours. People were very quick to pick up rumours back in those days. Bodies were being washed up on the shore, German uniforms on them. And I simply took no notice of it. I just didn't believe it.
Did you suffer any privations in Newton Abbot during the war? Anything
Nothing.
You couldn't get hold of?
Nothing at all. I mean, the rations were there. And with hindsight now, when I think back at it, I think what a good thing that was. I mean, for the diet of the country. We certainly didn't go hungry. There's no doubt about that. But we couldn't get the little luxuries that perhaps we used to be getting. I mean, the idea of a banana was just not in your vocabulary.
Were there many forces, servicemen around in
yes,
the town?
Yes, we had a camp about 3 miles out of the town, Denbury Camp. There were so many different units that came into there. I can't remember exactly, I couldn't quote not now which units they were. They were regular army. The ATS, I remember, at one time. And that was quite good for us because we were invited out, and it was quite nice to find the company of our young ladies out there and the elder dancers. And we used to have a conveyance put on through the Home Guard, actually. It was quite good if you ever organised that. Used to take us out to the camp. And
you mean a bus?
Well, bus or truck or whatever. Whatever was available. But yes, we used to enjoy those times with the ATS. But as I say, there were passing units that were going through. In fact, when I think of some of the marriages in Newton Abbot now, when the local girls and they're married to husbands who came from the other part of the country, it was through Denbury Camp that they met them.
Were there any prisoners of war in the area?
I didn't remember any at all, but my wife could tell you more about that. There were German prisoners of war. They were well received, actually, because they seemed to integrate very well into the community. They were very kind to the children. They would, perhaps some of them were gifted with their hands. They could make toys, which of course were not available in the shops at that time, but they could make, say, wooden toys for them. But as I say, my wife would know far more about that. There weren't any prisoners of war up to the time when I was called up. That would be 1942.
Can you tell me about your call up now and what happened?
Yes, I had to go to Exeter to Major Logan, was the recruiting officer, and he went through the record of what I had done, the Home Guard, and he found that very favourable. And then I was, I passed the medical, I was A1, on the thin side, so I was told, but then I'd always been slim up to that time. One doctor asked me the very direct question, have you always been this thin? I said, it's always. Never bothered me. But anyway, I was past A1 and told to report to Dorchester. And that was altered a little bit later. And I found that where I had to go was Colchester, at Gujarat Barracks in Colchester, where I did my initial training.
What was that like?
A bit scary fine to begin with. You come up against not the Home Guard type of discipline, but the real army discipline. I think one of the first memories was that with the inoculations and vaccinations, which of course back in those days were a little bit more severe than they actually were now. It seemed to me that they used just one needle to do the whole platoon. I remember we wanted to come out into the town. You know, wanted to get out to Colchester, get out the way of the barracks for just a moment. But the army authorities were much cleverer than what we were. It was autumn, and we were supplied with brooms, and we were told to clear the leaves from the officers' quarters. Well, of course, as fast as we cleared up one set of leaves, the next batch of leaves were falling down. And the army authorities knew what they were doing, because we never finished that task, but we were kept in the barracks. They didn't want us to go out. That was the whole scenario. They didn't want us to risk that with the vaccinations and the inoculations. They didn't say that we were confined to barracks, but it was effective. We were confined because we could never complete that task.
What was the discipline like at Colchester?
It was strict. It was strict.
Can you describe it?
Pardon?
Can you describe it?
Well, it was, I suppose, the drill sergeants. It was the first time that I actually come up against this. It was later in service life that I realized that there could be two different types of NCOs, of senior NCOs. The one that with the active units or the drill, which were confined to barracks such as that. And I realise now that discipline had to be severe, and it was. I mean, if a man did misbehave himself, the punishment would be that he held a rifle above his head and he had to double around the parade ground a dozen times. So it was a lesson that was well and truly learnt. I got on very well with the unit as such. It was a remarkable thing that the boy in the next cot to me in the barrack room was a boy from Wolverhampton. Now, the first thing that he said to me, I more or less called him, but he's telling me a lie. He said he'd never seen the sea. I said, well, that's impossible. Everybody has seen the sea, because I came from the sea. But he had never seen the sea. So this was my first reawakening to what it would be like living in the Midlands. But I do remember that up to that time, although I came from what some of the lads would call, you come from the sticks, you talk very slow, talk with that bumbledom dialect. But I said, hold on. I said, do you know, I've lived in Devon for 18 years and I had never met an illiterate man, not until now. And now in this unit, I've met three. One from London, from Liverpool, and from Manchester. And I said, that's a thing that I have never met, although living in the sticks. And I think it became known in the unit a little bit later on that although we may come from the sticks, that our nature was such that those men, when they received letters, I would be the one to read them their letters, and I would be the one that wrote their letters for them. So I think that in the end it became known. And it's a funny thing that later on, when we were forming a unit, eventually I was sergeant. And I remember there was a lance corporal buzzing around. He was very keen to get on. And he said, Hamlin, he said, you talk slow, you act slow, and you are slow. Well, 12 months afterwards, he was still a lance corporal, and I was just getting my third stripe. But I didn't remark anything about that to him. But I did know that that unit then consisted of an officer from Exeter. I was sergeant from Newton Abbott. The lance sergeant was from Plymouth. And the six corporals were scattered between Somerset, Dorset, and Devon. So whether that had any meaning at all, but I certainly didn't wear that, the jibes that sometimes I took about being from the sticks. It didn't never rattle me or mean anything to me.
Were you punished yourself on basic training?
No, never. Never. One of those goody-goodies. Just managed to keep on the right side. Fortunate, because it got pretty near at times. Fortunate, but no, I wasn't. What was the worst I ever got anywhere near? We were stationed at Bradford, Manningham Park. Now, this is wholly now an Indian quarter. I see it on the television that the whole area is all Indian. But anyway, that's the vehicles that we had were parked in Manningham Park, and we were part of Manningham. And the very great friend that I had, he was a Wolverhampton boy, a boy called Mould, M-O-U-L-D. And he was very, very keen on his football, very keen. Wolverhampton being the team of the moment. And we had internationals were being played inter-unit, Western Command, this army I'm talking about, Western Command, we're playing Eastern Command, Southern Command, Northern Command, Scottish. And they were playing at Uddersfield. And we couldn't cheaply get away. We couldn't get permission to go from Bradford to Uddersfield, to Leeds Road, the ground. And we took a chance, and away we went. Got the bus and over to Uddersfield, and we saw our match, came back. Where have you been? So